Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, broadcasting from a secure location inside my apartment because my main computer has been taken over by a magical wizard who is doing dark arts on it for a secret project. So I'm relocated to the kids' table.
It's funny because I saw the moment I saw you, I was just like, isn't that the same building where his good computer usually is with the nice microphone?
Yeah, I have the world famous Dan Dirks, who, by the way, I'm not going to name names, but I did happen to take a person we all know with the initials DD to the Magic Castle last night. Oh. And I watched this guy partake in quite a number of different beverages. And I'm sitting there shaking my head going, and he's supposed to help me code this project tomorrow. And I'm like, kind of like all smug. Got a bunch of friends there. And I'm like, Dan's having a somebody named DD is having a great time. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. This is how are we going to get this done? Flash forward, I wake up this morning, wiping my eyes. I stumble into the living room. Dan's already out of the sofa bed, sitting away coding. Hey, what's going on? And I didn't have anything to drink.
I could have
guessed the ending to that story. That there's no way that even a hungover Dan gets up. It's like 100% chance that a hungover Dan gets up before Andrew.
Speaking of machines, we got Justin Robert Young, the political machine.
If anybody thinks that Barack Obama isn't doing this on purpose, then let's dispel that notion.
And speaking of Brian the Eagle, the downhill racer.
Yeah, dude. As long as we're using the word dispel, let's make sure to use it properly and say let's dispel with it. Let's dispel with that notion.
Exactly. And also, let's dispel with the notion that you people think that Barack Obama isn't doing this on purpose.
Yes. My Facebook feed now here. Thanks, guys. My post on Facebook 2 days ago was like, I'd pay hold card cash for a political politics filter on there. It's like, oh, God.
It's a double whammy, too, because it's either people annoyed that you are not following sports. Like, God forbid, like earlier today I did, you know, kind of a vague, like genuinely I woke up, I'm like, oh, it's the Super Bowl. And I'm like, hey, that thing everyone cares about is happening. Hope the better team wins. And then somebody was just like, hey man, that's hackneyed now. You can't just act like you don't care about sports. And I was like, because heckling on Twitter is so much better.
Well, here's the fun thing. Tomorrow we're all going to be friends. Politics, no.
That's true.
You know,
everybody's friends with politics. We can all, it's my one man crusade that politics is the universally enjoyable thing. In fact, the salvation lies in our heart.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, speaking of sports ball.
Yeah.
There was a rather interesting, cool concept video that Microsoft put up about like what would it be like to watch. I guess they have the right, so they can call it Super Bowl. They don't have to use like the big game or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Microsoft provides their Surface tablets.
That includes makes them also a Super Bowl sponsor too. So they have a really cool video. Have you seen this? Their HoloLens. Like what it would be like watching a game like the Super Bowl with the HoloLens. Have you seen this, guys?
I've never seen this. Play it for me now, and I'll do my best to describe it. We're looking at, let's see, the video's loading right now, looks about 4 minutes long, and this
Of course, for HoloLens, if you're not familiar, it is an augmented reality situation where you are watching, not only would it basically be your television, it would also kind of overlay other information, which obviously is something very, very interesting.
So we have fans doing fan things, grabbing, putting on their colors, getting ready to gang war.
And, TV, getting on their HoloLens visors.
And by the way, these almost certainly not functioning HoloLens visors from the incredibly svelte nature of them.
So the first thing that you notice is that the television that they are watching now becomes far larger. The picture for everybody with HoloLens gets larger than what the tiny screen is on the wall.
And then they're looking at a miniature version of the football stadium in front of them.
So the stadium just appeared in three dimension on the coffee table in front of them, so they could look down and see the stadium, right? And yeah. So all of a sudden, all these stats are starting to appear around the room. The whole wall is a TV showing a much wider view of what's going on in the football game. Players are now bursting through the walls of the room with stats. They have appearing on the floor is a football field with all sorts of like different data on it. They're watching basically, you know, Star Wars three-dimensional, the holographic chess is with players appearing on the coffee table. You know, you're getting, players appear to magically show you their stats and show you their throwing arm in the middle of the room. You're doing instant replays with miniature, like little army men football players running across the coffee table.
Wow. That is certainly amazing. This is really the promise of augmented reality, right? Even if you don't care about football, football's an interesting case study because, number one, you have built-in breaks within the action wherein you could indulge in more data that even in terms of sports you don't really have in general. And also that you have this kind of culture of, you know, it's said that the best announcers are ones that are continuing to explain to viewers how little they really know about football. And so you have this idea that, oh, I want to see the overhead view of this play that just unfolded in the Super Bowl. I want to see all these stats. I don't know how relevant the idea of Marshawn Lynch running into my living room like the Kool-Aid man really is, but I think that's more just to demo how interesting the HoloLens is as technology.
Yeah, I got to tell you, one of the first questions popping up in the chat is like, did they get past that FOV problem? And of course, our big disappointment with the HoloLens, the promise is fantastic, but in actuality, the field of view is astonishingly tight. I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that since they're clearly not wearing actual HoloLens technology, this is one of those, you know, futuristic...
Two points, Brian.
Yes.
One is those look like the ones I've seen reporters use. So I think those are pretty – I think those are accurate HoloLens.
I thought the whole thing was like a giant helmet. It was huge.
No, that's Magic Leap.
All right.
The HoloLens different. Magic Leap's that's that. And then second, they have shown at the very beginning of the video, they do show this sort of smaller screen within a screen. That's sort of like, yeah, and then like – yeah, this is we know there's a field of view. We're being honest, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're looking over people's heads as the thing's taking up the entire wall, and you're like, well, nobody's getting that. See right there?
Yeah, there we go. So there is a brief period that it gives an accurate representation of what it looks like from your mind, and then the rest is, you know, some weird imagined view of everything.
Yeah. So I love what they've done though, in the idea of saying this is what this technology does. It's how we take this huge big event that's taking place in that space, and this is how we're going to put it into your space. And the problem with 3D TVs and the why they never took off was, you know, it's like, oh yeah, cool, I get a little depth there, that's cool, but it's still not worth the effort.
I would barely differ, because 3D seems to have survived in movie theaters where it died in consumer televisions, and I think the reason is quite simply movie theaters had circular polarized lenses. They had a superior format. It's still not the best, still not the greatest, whereas on the consumer side, you know, when you bought a television, it was either the Flicker Vision polarized, you know, flip on and off, or I think they only in the last couple of years or so started actually having circular polarized lenses that were closer to the technology used in movies.
Well, but even then, the bonus of a 3D television isn't really all that much. You know, you are taking what is a communal experience, let's all get together and watch a movie, and making it an alienating experience, potentially, if five friends come over and you only have four specific 3D lens things for your cameras, or for your television. With HoloLens, at least, it seems to be something that is like, okay, this is personal. You will be the geek at your football party, but this is an indulgent personal experience in that you're probably the guy who's on your phone looking up these stats. You are looking up the replay on Twitter. If this is appealing to you, this is just a different way to do it. And you kind of look like a partial Judge Dredd.
I mean, okay, so when you look at this video, you see an expanded version of the video screen they're watching the game on. You see random players bursting in and showing off their avatars. You see, like, an overhead thing. It seems to me like all of this misses the boat on what's truly great about VR and 3D. What you want is to experience being in the game. And that's the one thing they don't show you in this. It seems like...
Well... Because I think like that is more the soup to nuts thing, right? Like that's ESPN's pitch is if this takes off. Now tune into our HoloLens only channel where you are in the game. Microsoft can't promise that. Microsoft can promise, hey, look, what you normally see, bigger, better, and enhanced. Because that is, I mean, granted, there's a degree to all of this is being vaporware. But them promising new specific content that puts you in there is something that's totally beyond their control unless they, like, you know, outbid ESPN for the NFL contract.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I think it's come down to what will make that experience different or interesting to people. And to me, it certainly looks novel and neat when they're able to shrink the game down to so it's like, you know, fitting on your coffee table, like, you know, air hockey or, you know, one of those, you know, the electric vibrating football boards, you know, like the kind of thing. It's neat. Will it be something every Saturday people are going to watch or whatever? I don't know. I'm not too sure. Like movie theater 3D, you know, it went to the point where like they had declining ticket sales, and the way that they were able to reinforce 3D ticket sales was by Disney, like company like Disney would go in and say, it's mandatory. You have to do X number of showings in 3D. And there's certainly people who love it, but that's been problematic there because it's not as immersive as an experience. But I think to your point, Brian, is like it better be a really immersive experience to pay off. And we're getting yelled at for using VR and AR interchangeably. Well, if we call it virtualized reality, then it's the same thing.
Yeah, no,
oh,
and,
snap.
Well, and plus also, if you can paint a figure, you know, kicking down your door like the Kool-Aid man and coming into the room, then you can also paint being in the middle of a, you know, a quarterback's experience.
So here's my question. We are right now talking over the pregame for the Super Bowl. How many Super Bowls from now is an experience like that available retail?
I'm going to say 4 years from now. Not even five.
Four Super Bowls.
I'm going to say 4 Super Bowls from now, there will be some version of a VR experience because we already have the technology to do immersive VR. I know that they're working on real-time stuff is a little more difficult because there's a lot of processing to be done. But I'm going to say within four Super – hold on. Let me put it this way. Four Super Bowls.
Super Bowls, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here first.
Brian's locked in his prediction. We want you to mark it on Twitter.
Hold on.
Brian says four, no more, no less.
To clarify, the technology will be used in a game, not necessarily the Super Bowl, because Super Bowl, you know, they want to take their time with that. That's their flagship shenanigans. So I don't know that it'll happen in the Super Bowl, but it will happen within NFL by then.
Yeah, I would say someone's going to launch a product within the next 2 years. Someone's going to launch an AR product, right? And it's either going to be HoloLens or Magic Leap or something in between that we don't quite know about yet that's put out by somebody that already makes stuff, right?
Yeah.
Either that or you look at the VR, since we are delineating between AR and VR, and maybe it's, you know, some kind of live, you know, we already stream the Super Bowl for free. You know, maybe there's an enhanced version that Oculus or something would do. I think that by next Super Bowl, we are going to get we're going to at least see the press release and the buzz. This year, experience the Super Bowl like never before with your bleep blop and your Jeep Jorp.
Well, gentlemen, you mentioned Magic Leap, and let's jump right into Magic Leap. Magic Leap is that dark horse, semi-stealthy company developing their own augmented reality technology funded by Google and other major ventures using a technology they called mixed reality light field. They have, I think, over
out in Plantation, right next to the dirty-ass Checkers.
Yeah. So right now we're watching a video showing their version of what this would look like if you're looking for it. The first thing we see is a blue whale surfacing in right through a gymnasium in a school and splashing into the floor. And now there's
Can you imagine like being in the splash zone and not feeling the splash? How gypped would you feel at that moment?
I know. And just imagine how unfunny the Gallagher one's going to be.
So we're seeing the demo now they did with Weta, which is the Peter Jackson special effects shop out of New Zealand, where some guy's shooting, you know, robots in his office. And then we're getting demos. So there's a new blog post from the head of it, which is Roni Abovitz. He was a guy that developed a surgical robot that's been widely used. I think he's a medical doctor himself. Apparently a very brilliant guy and convinced people to part over with $8 billion of the funding. That's not the valuation of the company. That's how much actual money they have. And as Justin pointed out, they bought an entire Motorola factory in our old hometown in Florida. Mm-hmm. And he says now in this blog post, he sort of gets a little poetic talking about Leica cameras, Fender Stratocasters, and getting into the idea of creating something about what when they're going to have their first, let's not call it a product. The Lodo is a product many levels, but on some levels it needs to be more. We are sitting at supply chain operations, manufacturing, many whirly gigs and test machines and gizmos around these days. And he's, you know, hinting that their first thing will not be everything, but will be a big step in a new direction. So
yeah, that's the problem, is at some point you actually have to put out a thing. But imagine the misery of even as you put out the first generation thing, you know that in your lab you have something that blows it away, that functions right now, but you can't possibly release it because it's cost prohibitive and it doesn't make sense for the marketplace.
I do know I can report exclusively here to Weird Things that roughly 6 months ago, they started staffing up for commercial supply chain positions, so it seems like this is something that, they want to get something out the door, sooner rather than later. And they're at the point now where it's like, didn't they just raise another crazy amount of money?
Yeah, I'd put it past, I believe, it's Bill Mark.
Say again?
The latest round, I think, put them past the billion mark as far as...
Which is so funny because right now, in terms of public demonstrations, Magic Leap started off, they were the first person that really kicked off this whole worldwide conversation about augmented reality. And yet we've watched is it the HTC Vive as step Vive, forward? Yeah. We've seen HoloLens. But still, like all of these in the publicity wars, I would say Magic Leap is sadly in last place, even though they were the first to bring it to the public's attention.
But the difference is this, is that they're working on a whole new level of technology of image projection. They have a whole new where HTC and all the VR systems are using, if you say, okay, if we're using the best in class OLED displays, or if we're going to go for this thing or whatever, that's one VR. When it comes to augmented reality, the only major player right now is Microsoft with HoloLens, and that narrow field of view was sort of a deal killer for a lot of people. And you looked in their own demos, they show you looking at a TV and how it expands over it, but you still see the frame of the TV and all that, and so it looks like it might be a little bit more translucent. Where what if you look at the patents for Magic Leap, this is a totally different technology they're working on, like literally projecting right into the retina. I mean, and people who've gone and used, and that's where we've heard about the really big, huge rigs and stuff who've tried that, have said that it's absolutely incredible. Like looking at things that really are in your real space. They're not ghost-like. They're not translucent. They appear to be incredibly realistic. So – I don't think they're worried about the fact that they don't have, all the attention, because their goal is they would rather deliver something that is the implementation of what they think is their killer tech that will blow us away.
And let's also remember, whoever wins or becomes profitable in AR will step over the bones of Google Glass, which was supposed to be the big breakthrough in augmented tech reality. Especially looking at that initial what they wanted it to be, not what they settled on.
I don't know if it's a heads up. I don't know that it technically counts as augmented reality because it didn't. I mean,
No. Yeah, no. I listen.
HoloLens are totally
different than what Google Glass was. I'm saying that they pitched Google Glass as this is going to be the augmented on your head, see the world in a different way, visualize the data that's on your phone device. It wasn't that. It absolutely wasn't that. And I think that, you know, that they would rather, because they would rather overperform on their promises, they're fine being quiet right now.
Yeah. The other dark horse is Apple. When they just had their latest quarterly announcement, they asked Tim Cook, what are your thoughts on VR? And Apple, as we've known, has acquired a number of VR firms behind the scenes and not doing big announcements about that. And they've hired a bunch of people, and they've got a ton of patents. And Tim Cook said, I think it's pretty interesting. And so that's code for they've got hundreds of people working on their own idea.
Yeah.
Will we ever see it?
Okay. Man, I mean, it's like it's difficult to even know what to say about that kind of thing, you know, because it's like when you talk Apple and what Apple's doing on, you might as well question or try to predict the motivations of a genie. You know, it's like it's inside the bottle. We're not going to know nothing until they pop out.
They could spend $1 billion on it and then have a meeting, and then somebody can do exactly what Brian just did and go,
I mean, listen, there's a chance. That is happening right now with the car. I mean, you read the tea leaves and the Kremlinology of the Apple car, which you have to figure even to dip your toe in that water is you are in the billions, right? And now there's whispers that you know, they're not as far along as they want, and who knows whether or not that leads them, wouldn't be the you know, the first time that they took a big initiative and said, you want to know what? Meh, probably not.
Yeah. But of course, you know, therein lay the power. Like the people I respect most in the magic and artistic world, strangely, seem to be the ones who have a better power of saying no than I do to, you know, television opportunities and all this other stuff. They're able to look and say, yes, this appears to have money behind it. Yes, it appears to be a big distribution and a big deal. No, this doesn't feel like a good match for me and my brand, which is astonishing to me. And to me, you know, that is a big part of why Apple has my respect.
Which is why you can see Brian on thebangbus.com debuting this week.
I can't say no. I can't say
can't
no to
say
anything.
No.
I
can't nothing. Say no.
We called it the Magic School Bus. For some reason, that didn't go over very well.
I'll tell you why. I don't think that Miss Frizzle is qualified at all to teach those children.
It's exciting times, no matter what. Speaking of exciting times, I keep bringing you exciting times here.
Yes. Unfortunately, we're canceled. I forgot to mention all that.
Oh, no!
Yeah, no.
Why?
Look, I'm sorry. I've been looking over the financials. Not one major network has picked up weird things. Not one podcast network will touch us. Mm-hmm. We've been trying ever since 2010 to get picked up by a podcast network. No one will have us. There's no way for us to survive.
Well, Brian, you're mistaken.
What?
We're not canceled. You want to know why? The proletariat has spoken. Yes, you, the listeners, fund us at patreon.com/weirdthings.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was just lost in thought about the fact that back in 2010, we actually really did try really hard to pitch ourselves to a podcast network, and we were turned down.
We were told, yes, everything's good. And then we money was spent, effort was expended, and then we found out that yes was not really a yes.
Listen, I'm not going to say who, right? We'll just say his initials are AM, but somebody purchased a Wi-Fi hotspot for the very specific reason of streaming and then was furious. It was just this relic of a promise broken from this podcasting network that also provided a service in dead spots. It was just like this constant beating heart reminder of the promise broken by this unnamed podcasting network that now no longer exists.
I mean, look, we all agree that different regions have different grammatical uses of terminology or whatever, but apparently folks east of the Mississippi thought greenlit meant something different than folks in California.
Yeah, yeah. And this is an idea that went through many drafts. In fact, more than two drafts.
Anyway, you can support Weird Things if you head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings.
Less than 4 improvements.
Yeah, man. Keep us in your faces.
Speaking in your faces, you know what'd be good to have in your faces?
Pie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I could think of maybe a delicious foot-long Subway sandwich brought to you by the Weird Things Podcast. Get to Subway right now for Subway sandwiches.
Thank you. That's the Pizza Hut plug of the day, brought to you by Pizza Hut. And once every episode, we bring you a plug for a product that doesn't actually pay us, brought to you by PizzaHut.com.
Let's go to the Mrs. Fields guest line. Andrew, piping hot and fresh, delicious Mrs. Fields. Andrew, go ahead.
Gentlemen, imagine that you have a very exclusive club with some of the most celebrated people in the world who are members. These are people who are scientists, adventurers, pioneers, people who like to go into the frontier, people who seek out new experiences, people who want to go where other people have not gone before. And maybe you have a really fancy clubhouse and you decide to have a gala. Maybe, you know, a few years back when norms are a little bit different, and you say, you know what? Befitting our reputation for who we are, and we're going to have an amazing gala, and we're going to have dinner. We need to have the most awesome dinner you could possibly have.
I mean, I would expect, you know, given how important science is, I would expect nothing less. It sends a message that what you're doing is important work.
And not just science, just exploration. So we're going to put together a menu. We're going to put together a menu. And these are the most worldly travelers you could possibly imagine. They've seen everything. They have gone through who knows what kind of inhumane ordeals in some cases to trek into the unknown. And we're going to plan a dinner for them. What would you want to include?
I mean, I would imagine exotic meats would be on the menu.
Sure, Brian, yeah. I would imagine maybe a soup of leeks.
I was thinking more like I've never eaten python meat. I would so go to a gala where I could eat python scallops or something.
I would just think the entire menu from Temple of Doom.
Yes!
So I think you guys are on a good start here, okay? Perhaps we go for some of the most exotic we could. How about some bison steaks?
Oh, dude, bison is delish. Buffalo steak?
What is it? Is it Kobe Wagyu beef thought to be the best in the world?
Yeah, but that's, you can get that in a lot of places. We need to be a little more exotic.
Okay, what about
a guy named Kobe and another guy named Wagyu?
How about actual Kobe Bryant? He's retiring from the NBA. Done with your usefulness, sir. Now you'll be fed to the rich.
Just give us a leg. Just one leg.
How about some Pacific spider crab?
I mean, it has the S word in it, but I like the crab, or I like the C word more than the S word.
Green turtle
soup? You do.
Wait, what kind of sea turtle soup?
Green turtle soup.
That seems legit.
Giant sloth?
Yeah, look at this. I'm looking at a picture of baby green turtles right now. I would eat them.
Yeah. They look delicious. We don't mean green turtle as in the chain of restaurant and bars in the greater Virginia and Maryland area either. These are made from actual green turtles.
By the way, for the record, I don't know if you've heard this little bit of trivia, but on their journeys back from the New World, sailors would oftentimes stack sea turtles on their backs on top of each other as they lived and starved to death over the multi-month voyage, because that was a way to preserve them and keep them fresh, so that you could eat them, because they were delicious before we pretty much made them almost extinct.
So I back up. You guys cool some giant sloth?
That's kind of, we're getting into Uncanny Valley on exotic and possibly delicious versus just too darn cute to eat, right?
Can I pretend that it's, cloned meat that was grown in a lab, and that this is just, copied?
No, in fact, as to show your mettle as among the elite adventurers of the world, to show that you are worldly enough and you have indeed seen atrocities and not blinked, you have to watch the sloth for over. It's like one of those things where it's like on your driving test. You have to like watch a video and you can't skip it. They just send you a link and you have to prove that you watched 40 minutes of the sloth being adorable. And then immediately you sit down to eat.
Well, gentlemen, there is one problem if we wanted to have a banquet with giant sloth right now. What would be the problem?
They're extinct, I do believe.
Yes, that is the problem.
Yeah.
See, 1951, the Explorers Club said that they had a very particular menu that they were going to put together, including extinct animals that they perhaps said that they found on ice. Woolly mammoth was supposed to have been on the menu. Giant sloth, among other delicacies.
What? Okay, now how much of this? Okay, hold on. How much of this?
Okay, I also here, Brian. Just at the end, I need to explain your face because for audio listeners, you just need to understand, and I want to make sure that I was correct. But go ahead.
How much of this is spinning a web of deception to create this ultimate placebo effect, similar to how you go to certain restaurants and the food's no better than in other places, but they go out of their way to instill in you, and you've seen all of the 2020 reports where it's like, we gave them apple juice and told them it was a 1,000-year-old Chardonnay. What happens next, you won't believe. I'm Elizabeth right. Vargas. I'm John Stossel. It's 2020.
Brian, okay. Now, I'm going to tell you, it's the Explorers Club. They have quite a reputation. Yeah. This is a legitimate enterprise. This place is a historic institute. And for you to impugn their reputation and to suggest that in 1951, when they held their gala dinner and promised people they could eat exotic animals, some of which are now on the endangered and threatened list, but that's not important, that they would include on that list things they did not have access to, like woolly mammoth or sloth. How dare you, sir? How dare you?
Let me again just describe for the audio listeners Brian's face, because it went in two very distinct phases.
Okay.
Phase one, that explorers would have possibly exotic meats that may or may not have come from animals that are alive right now. Excitement level 6. That was then immediately eclipsed into an excitement level 12 with the idea that this was a complete scam.
Yes.
And that it was like, oh my God, wait, this is so much more interesting than they were lying. Finally, my people. Yes. I was so
accurate.
So
100% accurate. I will sign off on that diagnosis, officer. That was amazing.
From the Daily Mail, a legendary Explorers Club dinner in 1951 that had claimed to serve up extinct mammals, has been revealed to be a hoax. The club is famous for its exotic dinners, and that particular event in New York made headlines as it listed woolly mammoth and an extinct ground sloth on its menu. But testing on a specimen of leftovers has since revealed that the jar actually contained sea turtle at a time when the animal is not endangered. The tests have also revealed that Wendell Phillips Dodge, who organized the meeting, appeared to be playing a practical joke on the members, which he hinted at in a subsequent interview. Dodge, a respected explorer himself, said that he had found a potion that would transform turtle, Chelone, Midas, Chiuba, in case you guys are waiting for the scientific name, from the Indian Ocean into giant sloth.
Okay, can we have a quick referendum?
Hold on. Killjoy, Jessica Glass, Killjoy added that, a Yale graduate student and co-lead author of a study published Wednesday in the journal PLOS ONE, said, I'm sure people wanted to believe it. They had no idea that many years later, a PhD student would come along and figure this out with DNA sequencing techniques.
Can we get a quick referendum on the gray border between hoax and scam? Because it seems to me like this is all kind of done in good fun. Like at which point, okay, so on the black side of the gray border, you have somebody like Peter Popoff, who claims to have divinely inspired talents to cure people of ailments, gets up on stage, slaps him on the forehead, says, be healed, and also give me tons of money, right? And meanwhile, you know, been debunked. There's clearly, recordings of behind-the-scenes interactions and so on. On the flip side, though, you have, let's say, a Halloween horror house where you get children in and you lie to them. You have their hands put in peeled grapes and you tell them that it's eyeballs and you lie to their face. However, you're creating this fantastic What, or, you know, say Santa Claus, if you believe that Santa Claus isn't real, as some do. Where on that spectrum does this fall? Because they did give a banquet, and the banquet was almost certainly more special for having lied to all of the patrons of it as to what they were eating.
Well, and also, oftentimes, we assume ignorance in bygone people, right? Like, it's like, oh, look at all these dummies who believe this was a thing. When, like, who knows whether or not everybody who went to that dinner with that exact same invitation and that exact same menu weren't like, oh my God, this is going to be great. We're eating extinct meat, everybody. How funny. I'm going to write this on a piece of paper because Twitter doesn't exist.
Exactly. Well, and that's the other thing is how many people aren't just, you know, talk, you know, like, oh, can you believe it, kids? We really are here at the North Pole. Here's jolly old Saint Nick right now.
Also, by the way, what Linda Tripp kept that doggy bag for, you know, 100 years?
Well, that's a deep cut, man. 18
Look
years.
It up, millennials.
That's amazing.
Good Lord. It's Brian. Yeah, that's a very interesting question. What's the difference? I think that it comes down to sometimes only a court can decide. You know, could somebody in 1951, if they were suspicious that they were not eating an extinct animal, have taken them to court? Yes, would they have won? I don't know. It depends upon, you know, what was the monetary gain on behalf of, what was the cost of the person? You know, how well, you know, that's a legal question. How much were you victimized by this? Was there a reasonable expectation that you should know that this was a hoax or whatever? You know, there is no hard line.
Yeah, and it's tough because, you know, I certainly am somebody who gets a kick out of a good hoax. I certainly loves me some hoaxes, but I also despise me some scam artists, so it's difficult.
Well, says the leader of scam school. yeah, I mean, I think there's...
By the way, we're changing the name of the show. It's now Hoax Hogwarts from now on.
I mean, listen... Okay, pretty close for that actually happening. The line on this always was drawn for me by Andrew. That Andrew, whenever I would talk about, like, you know, especially in the world, and magic has kind of seen this conversation specifically around Uri Geller. Uri Geller obviously was somebody through the prime of his performing career, or you know, pop culture legitimacy, presented himself as a real phenomenon. He made money saying that he was a real psychic, and now. Has kind of in his latter years started showing up at magic conventions, presenting himself as the greatest mentalist ever. Look, everybody believes I have superpowers. And the line has always been money and deception, right? Like, where are you using a false sense of understanding to exploit people for money? And that is obviously a complicated thing. I think Uri Geller is a great example because you can very easily point to places where he took money from those aggrieved to try and, you know, to use his crazy powers to get something. But that's always been the line.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a counterexample and I'm not coming up with something. Surely there have been cases where people have accepted money to do a hoax and it's ethically been okay. You know, certainly like, if I were to go on a ghost adventure, ghost hunting or whatever, and I paid $200 to spend the night and have someone tell me ghost stories and really try to sell me on, you know, the spiritual, whatever, I don't think that I would.
But that's not exploitation. That's not exploitation. You know, if you were genuinely looking for a ghost, and then they lied to you and showed you evidence, then
no,
I think that would
see,
be different,
I,
right?
I would say the reverse, because I would say if this guy's job is to take $500 and to put on a show that's 12 hours long and somewhere along the way a ghost will be encountered, I don't know that it's his obligation to know whether or not you're genuinely looking for your aunt or whether you're going on a lark with some friends for an overnight.
That's where it comes into, you know, this is where an attorney would be best able to answer this. And if you look at when, let's say, a certain famous psychic was doing a tour and he would tell people he could talk to their dead relatives, They would often say entertainment purposes. Remember 900, the psychic hotlines, they would say for entertainment purposes. And that was because they wanted to make sure that they were skirting any issues of promise, of making promises that they could not fulfill. Because if you say, it's one thing somebody says, hey, we'll go do a ghost tour, maybe we'll see something, fine. If you go to somebody and say, Justin, I will pay you $500 if you will show me a ghost. And Justin says, yes, I will show you a ghost. He takes you into a room and you see a plastic garbage bag there, you know, in the middle, attached to a fan. And he's like, thank you, I take the money, and he leaves. And you won, but you have to then establish that Justin knew that was a hoax.
Or you just need to establish that both of you meant the same thing when you said the word, quote unquote, ghost. Because it may be, it's like, hey, man, it looks like a ghost to me. I seen a ghost. Who else seen a ghost? Say yeah.
The threshold and the legal threshold would probably, there would be an assumption that we have an assumption of what ghost would probably mean prior. Although in a good contract, you would define that. But then you would have to prove, though, that did he not know that that was a ghost? You know, maybe he's very naive and he's scared of everything.
But what if I were to tell you that that ghost died in 1904?
What?
It's a plastic bag that was shot along with President McKinley.
Hang on, let me see when President McKinley, was he shot?
He was. It was 1901, I think, though. It was the World's Fair.
Oh my gosh! I forgot. There's somebody who is currently living a 10th grade civics nightmare. In that, all of a sudden, he's thrust into the heart of political discourse, and all of a sudden, needs to know all of this stuff.
Hey, gentlemen, I'm sorry to interrupt this. I have an Indian bus driver report.
Oh,
really?
Do you remember our last Indian bus driver report?
I remember it was an Indian.
Of course. Brian, take it away. Brought to you by Taco Bell, the Indian bus driver recap.
Our bus driver was taking a nap bus, then all of a sudden realized the bus was starting to move, was starting to drive.
Oh, that's right.
He's like, hey, I don't think I'm part of one of these Google self-driving bus projects yet. I think there's something amiss. And he looks to see who would be in the driver's seat, and he can't see anybody. There's no person driving the bus. Was it a ghost?
It was an 8-year-old or 12-year-old, if I remember correctly.
I said no person, Brian.
Oh, that's right. It was a monkey.
A monkey.
Yeah.
Monkey hopped in there, figured out how to pop this thing into gear or whatever, and started driving the bus. Or I don't think he was in the bus. I think he had to chase after it. Either way.
Wait, are you telling me that we have another in the same vein? Another of these amazing stories?
I'm saying we have another Indian bus driver story, and it's a very tragic story. And I'm telling you that this may be – Indian bus driver may be our new goblin. It may be new what befalls these people.
All right. First of all, they're not all
laughing,
rapists,
Brian.
Right?
Stop laughing. There's a very serious Indian bus driver story. It's tragic, so don't laugh.
So this actually – the guy died. He was – Can you guess
how he died?
Yeah.
Was it in a bus or outside of a bus?
I don't think he was in a bus at the time.
Okay. Was he scared when he died?
I think it was pretty fast.
All right. Was he run off the road by another vehicle?
No, he may not even been. I think he was walking along. He just happened to be employed as a bus driver.
Oh, the plot thickens.
When he expired, was all of his body intact?
No.
Oh dear.
Three others were injured.
Okay.
Was he hit by another car?
A vehicle?
Not hit by a vehicle.
Was he sliced by a katana?
No.
Was it a person intentionally killing him, or it was an accident?
It was not a person doing something to him.
Well, no, this is monkey related. We know that it's monkey related.
Not monkey related.
Goblin related?
Not goblin related.
Was it the horrible asp?
They're very dangerous, I hear, from 30-year-old movies.
Nope.
Huh. Okay, was it drone or aerial flying aircraft related?
No, that's not
because people being killed by drones is such a shocking and surprising thing that doesn't happen like every day now.
Yeah, sorry, that belongs on the show called Average Normal Things.
In the, exactly. Yeah, this Foreign is a Policy Minute with Bri-Bri, the Gerbs, and A-Bomb.
A-Bomb.
It's not related to the War on Terror, no. That we know of.
Okay, try this on for size. The dude, his name is Charles. He
dangerous territory. Go back.
Dude, no, his name's Charles. And
all right.
He works. He got some overtime, so he knows he's got a big paycheck coming, but he needs more money, so he goes to a check cashing place. And he just got his cash advance on his next paycheck. He's walking down the street when suddenly, not a vehicle, suddenly he trips and falls, pushing two other people into the spinning blades of some kind of chopping thing. Am I close?
No, Brian.
All right, what do you got, Justin? And I need specifics.
Did he plummet to his death?
What's his name?
His name is Elliot.
Okay, all right.
Did Elliot plummet to his death, Andrew?
No, but I could make a interesting connection between the name you just chose.
Oh.
Was he an E.T.?
No, he was not an E.T.
Okay, but was he in was the Elliot. Movie E.T.? Like, was he a...
Did he love Reese's Pieces?
Yeah.
Elliot wasn't an E.T. either, guys.
I know, but...
He was just a T.
Yeah. Holy cow. I can't imagine what would leave his body chopped up.
It's like chopped up. It's just,
he said in pieces. So he might have exploded. Blown.
I mean, like, I don't know. I don't know the state of the body.
Did he swallow a bomb?
No.
To save a village. Brave Elliot.
I don't know that he's chopped up, or I know he was, they, I'll put it this way. It seemed to have the same effect of a bomb blast.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, he was drawn and quartered.
No.
For tomfoolery.
Nope. No person or people did this.
No person or people?
No, I thought it was just rogue horses by themselves. Just decided to cause some trouble.
These horses are like, oh, man, I love people pull them.
So
That's our game.
Let's go back to Elliot there. Give me a one sentence description of what happened to Elliot.
Elliot elevated in the elevator. Did he die in an elevator?
No.
Elliot encountered a being of another species, befriended it, and rode a bike through the sky.
Okay, well, let's shorten that. But we when you pet your dog, you encounter a being of another species.
Yeah,
that's
Elliot.
True.
Elliot couldn't quite smell it.
Let's see. Man, I don't know what. Real quick. Was there? You say there's no monkeys involved. Was there another species involved in his demise?
No.
Dang.
Unless this pertains to the novel Footfall, the answer is no.
The novel Footfall. Hold on, while I Google that. Okay, let's see. New novel Footfall is written by Larry Niven and Jerry Pournelle. It was nominated for Hugo Awards. Wait a minute. Does it involve an elephant?
Was he killed by Larry Niven?
No.
Man, I don't know. Physically,
listen. You gotta guide us. Throw us a few Reese's Pieces here, E.T.
Physically, the fifth resemble man-sized quadrupedal elephants with multiple trunks. They possess
elephants. Elliot, he was crushed by an elephant.
No.
Did he get his head stuck in an elephant's butt like that one person?
Oh my God, that's the best video.
No. What was the weapon of choice of the Philonip or whatever they were called in Footfall?
They are. I'm reading all of this. Let me type in weapon.
That's also just working. That's the pick for this week. Is footfall.
From Wikipedia, it says that they have laser cannons, projectile rifles,
kinetic energy weapons,
controlled meteorite strikes to bombard surface targets, light craft surface to orbit.
Oh, here we go. A meteorite strike. Was this man, was Elliot struck by a meteor?
Yeah.
What?
That's what they're saying. Maybe the first documented case of a human being killed by a meteorite.
What? I that's amazing, because I always heard that was the one thing, like, no meteor has ever killed a human, and then now
unless
that's not true.
You're a bus driver and you have monkeys stealing your vehicles, and now you have this.
Oh, those poor bus drivers.
Oh my God, so here we go. This is from the Indian Express, that this might be the first confirmation of an object of space killing a living thing on Earth this side of the 20th century. Wow, what a way to go.
I mean, look, we all have to go sometime, right? Would you elect, like, right now? Okay, let's say a genie shows up and says, listen, you're going to die at some point. You can either have it die however you were naturally going to go, or at this time, the only difference, you'll live just as long. Everything will be the same. Check, would you like to be killed by a falling meteor? Yes, no.
With the idea that I'm living exactly as long?
You're living just as long. Andy Pinky promises that your family will not be damaged. So it's not like you have to, like, dodge your family members because you're afraid you might be struck by a meteor.
Oh, yeah.
Any moment.
I mean, if that's just the way I go, sure. I mean, it seems painless enough.
Okay,
right?
but do realize that every moment you spend with loved ones increases the odds that they will be there to watch your body get horrifically crushed by a celestial object.
All right. Jeez, Debbie Downer. Why don't you read the fine print a little louder?
You just gotta evaluate all sides of this thing.
As opposed to what? I have a heart attack and they have to watch me slowly gasp?
Exactly. Or everybody gathered around as you expire your last breaths and they're holding their hands, they're singing Kumbaya or whatever as you pass away gently. But instead, they're definitely gonna watch you get squished like a bug.
I mean, you know, hey. Like, it would be like the beginning of a Paul Thomas Anderson movie or something. Like, you know, I'm sure it would be a quirky event that would bring everybody together by the third act.
Fair enough. I would so sign up for that. You got to go sometime, and that seems like a pretty rad way to go.
I mean, I think that it's rad, and on one level I'm with you, but then I just think of what would be the toll on my parents and family.
I mean, I'll tell you what. Like, I'm sure... Okay. Here's the one thing that would make it a slam dunk is before I sign, I'm like, can I tell everyone that this is how I'm going to go? And they're like, yeah, go for it. All of a sudden, that becomes my tagline. Every time I sign off on Night Attack, Weird Things, or whatever, I'm like,
dying by a meteor.
Exactly. And then I actually go to what's the crazy insurance? Lloyd's of London. And I'm like, I'd like to take out insurance. Against getting killed by a meteor. And then it's like they're not going to find out fraud. There's no way.
I mean, Brian, for whatever magical way you have to know that this is going to happen.
Although, by the way, how awesome would it be?
Me and gave me a choice.
How awesome would it be?
Cerritos, I might point out.
It'd be so great if your evil death genie was really just Lloyd's of London trying to make a quick buck on scam artists like you, and you just like, and it's like you have no death genie deal. You just got hoodwinked by the Lloyd's of Londoners.
the headline reads: "Wasn't a meteor, it was cancer." Sorry, Brian. Sorry to see you go.
The payout remains with us. Ha ha! You can't beat Lloyd's.
It's like Rick and Morty, the Needful Things parody.
Oh, so good. By the way, you know, Bonnie just hates watching any cartoons with me because she can't handle the goofy voices and stuff. And
are the cartoons.
Let me pick the, well, both. You know, I was like, let me try to trick you into watching a full episode of Rick and Morty. And it was that Needful Things episode that she made it all the way to the end and enjoyed it immensely. And I was very proud.
That's good.
Should we segue into picks then?
Let's do picks. Who's got a pick?
I got two picks. I don't know if you are you watching The Expanse?
I watched the first episode. I will go finish the rest because people seem to be raving about it as an entirety.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I'll say that. I don't think it'll be my pick though. But it is very good and it's worth watching all of. I went ahead and just bought the whole season on Amazon, and it's so great watching stuff commercial free. I'm reading right now by Ian M. Banks. Consider Phlebas. Have you read that?
I have not.
I have it. I think I read it.
It's neat because it's only the second. If you're not familiar, Ian M. Banks has written a whole series of novels all in the shared universe revolving around what are called the culture. It's a post-scarcity, abundance, post-everything world where they don't have money, they don't have ownership, they don't have real estate. Just humans live this communist paradise where they can all do anything they want. They have glands in their body to administer any drugs you can imagine. They live essentially forever with perfect, young, beautiful bodies. And the question, of course, is, you know, what are some of the things what does humanity occupy itself in a world where robots do all the heavy lifting and even all the heavy thinking in the universe? And it turns out that they play a lot of games and they do a lot of petty stuff and engage in a lot of affairs. I read Player of Games before, which was a fairly narrow focused. It was about a particular guy who was really good at games and he comes across a unique and interesting challenge, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. This one I'm enjoying for a different reason, because it takes place in, it turns out, the culture. While they're self-absorbed and involved in their shared fantasy of being able to do anything they want, they're also, oh, by the way, at war with a couple of different other races. But it's so far down on their list that they refuse to even name their ships with serious names. They give them like flippant names as if to show how little we care about this war. And the robots are mainly dealing with it. And what's interesting is the main character of Consider Phlebas is somebody who hates the culture. And of course, culture is, you know, humanity as we're on track to be. And he's siding with this one alien race, not because he necessarily cares one way or the other about the alien race, but just because he hates the culture so much and wants to see them taken down. It's really interesting, especially reading the two books side by side, where one portrays the culture as this very erudite, wonderful economy, this society, and then the other one is just like, you know, why don't you go worship and do whatever your robots tell you to do, jerks. I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
It's interesting that you mentioned the as far in the culture stories about the names of the ships and stuff. And Player of Games is one of Elon Musk's favorite books, one of mine. It's become the nerd catcher in the rye. And the ships that we've mentioned this before, but the drone ships they sent out to try to hopefully have the rocket first stages land on or crash into have been the names have come from books from ships from Ian Banks' culture series.
Yeah. And and by the way, if you missed it, we're talking about in real life, SpaceX has drone ships that are named after the drone ships from this series.
It's interesting, too, is that these stories in there take place that the idea is that the culture started off thousands of years ago with humans that were taken from Earth at some point and then expanded beyond. And so Consider Phlebas actually takes place in 1331 AD.
1331?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shoot. I didn't even put that together. Crazy. That's rad. And in fact, I remember thinking, like, is this because what they indicate that one of the things you see in Consider Phlebas is the existence of dead worlds, these worlds that at some time were important outposts during a war that literally nobody remembers what they were fighting over or even who won or you know, who cares or whatever, but they're still maintained and controlled by these artificially intelligent beings. Hey, whatever. Read it. I'm enjoying it, and I'd love to hear what you guys think. I would read Player of Games first. It's very easy to grasp, and it gives you a good foundation of what the culture is like, and it'll be fun to step out of that and experience Consider Phlebas, where the culture are not necessarily the good guys or perceived as the good guys.
On Amazon, it lists The Player of Games as the second book in the series. Do you find that there's a serialization?
I have not. I mean, I've only read, this is only my second one to read, but each one, it feels more like an anthology to me. Maybe there is a thread that brings everything together, but they feel like fairly different stories from fairly different corners of this very, very wise. What do they say? I think they said there was a trillion human beings or something like that. Just insane.
Oh, okay.
All right. I got a pick. This is a pick, since it is Super Bowl season or Super Bowl day. The Super Bowl's happening in a couple of minutes. Let's go ahead and do something football related, which is why I'm going to recommend The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Oh, dude, FX I'm so series. Stoked about this because I'm watching. I'm catching all the previews on FX. We watched while we were on vacation some FX, and it just looks really, really good.
I don't know where it is between just nostalgia porn of now. It's like, oh, finally, I've gotten old enough that the early 90s are something that are a period piece that everybody's got to wear funny clothes for. You know, it's something very, very interesting. It's Ryan Murphy. Don't run when I tell you that his previous credits include Glee and Eat, Pray, Love and Scream Queens. But it's got this very interesting bordering on kind of stunt casting of actors that are playing famous real people.
John Travolta plays Kardashian, right?
No, David Schwimmer plays Robert Kardashian.
What?
Travolta plays Shapiro.
Oh, that's right.
Who
yes.
is brought in. And then you've got just a host of people. Cuba Gooding Jr., roughly 200 pounds under what O.J. Simpson really was, which kind of loses some of the like hulking dynamic that sort of played into the idea that O.J. Simpson could very easily kill most people, let alone his tiny ex-wife. But Cuba Gooding Jr. loses in muscle mass. He has in spades when it comes to the paranoid mania of O.J. It's so interesting. It's very, very well paced. The reviews are very, very good. I very much enjoyed the first episode. Sarah Paulson is great as what's her butt, the public the public
all I can think of is attorney. Her haircut.
Marcia Clark. It's a very sympathetic portrayal of Marcia Clark. She is looked at as the put upon, overworked, attorney that has to tackle it. I don't know how dramatized this is because the entire story is so wild. But I think it does a very good job of sort of exploring this idea of, you know, among other things, it's this gigantic murder mystery that captured the nation's attention. But also in the meta narrative, it was this time where media got so big and in so many people's hands that the fundamental nature of how we looked at those that we admire changed. Not for everybody and not forever, but the idea that now and even today, we look for the dirt in a more mainstream way than we did before. The National Enquirer always existed, but now TMZ is a global brand. Right. And that was something that, especially considering this deals with, Robert Kardashian and his three daughters, is just interesting. So check it out. The People versus O.J. Simpson. It was a fun watch. And man, like there's still more like stunt casting that is yet to be revealed, including, I guess, Nathan Lane plays Effie Bailey. And there's just, I don't know, it's crazy pants with silly sauce.
Right on.
I have two picks. One is a little bit out there. I'm halfway through it, and it's very fascinating. It's the book Floating to Space, the Airship to Orbit Program, and it's written by John M. Powell. It's a bit pricey, although you can get used copies for 13 bucks. He has his own little company, or a company called JP Aerospace, where he's been building high-altitude balloons. And in this book, he lays out his vision for how to get to space using balloons.
Which
I like this crazy talk, Andrew.
No, no, no. But, I mean, it kind of is the most elegant and makes the most sense, right? I mean, if you had a diffuse enough bubble, you know, that was essentially close to essentially a vacuum inside, then the atmosphere would just squirt you right out of Earth's gravity well, right?
Well, making that diffuse bubble that's essentially a vacuum inside, that's a challenge unto itself.
I'm not saying it's not hard. I'm just saying if you're looking for the most elegant solution, that seems like, you know, on paper, the easiest way to do it, right?
So his idea is you build these dark sky stations, which I think I've been obsessed with, and I'm actually using in the third one of my space ops novels as a set piece for part of it. At 140,000 feet up, where the atmosphere is thinner than it is on Mars, you have this giant, massive balloon structure supporting a platform. You take one airship up to there that can go from ground to 140,000 feet up, and then up there at that dark sky station, where it's called dark sky because you're looking, it's like, it's, you're 140,000 feet, you know, you're 10% of the way, 20% of the way, you know, 10% of the way to a, you know, space station or low Earth orbit. So you're looking at the Earth and you just see dark sky up above you. From there, you have a vehicle, an ascender, which has got a super thin material. These things are like kilometers across, and they use, let's say, maybe ion propulsion or some sort of electrical propulsion to move forward and then to get aerodynamic lift to raise itself. And it has to take days and days for it to finally reach enough velocity. It has to reach escape velocity, you know, 17,000 miles an hour. So it has to travel ridiculously fast. And there's just almost no atmosphere there. But there is atmosphere. You know, the space station, the International Space Station, goes through the thermosphere. They have to change the pitch of the solar panels. They have to adjust things. We have satellites that are aerodynamically designed because there is atmosphere up there. And so the idea here is to build things on a scale that you can still use Bernoulli principles, et cetera, and get lift. And Jesus. So he has a very crazy vision that I'm not intelligent enough to tell you engineering-wise or science-wise why it wouldn't work, other than there's a lot of hard problems to solve.
So what does this book read like? Does it read like a technical paper or?
No, he's trying to write it to a layperson, and he does things like in the Gerard O'Neill book, Gerald O'Neill book, who talked about building space stations in space. He has, like, in his book, he would have like a letter from somebody there describing to you what it's like. Pal employs the same technique, having somebody describing somebody as they go into their trip into a dark sky station and what it's like. And it's just, you know, it's written in kind of a kid's book kind of thing. He gets tech, but it's not too technical. And he uses a lot of examples of what we've done before. Cause people are like, ah, balloons, that sounds crazy. Like, well, actually, like, we had our Explorer satellite where it's like a big giant balloon we inflated, and this thing was going in low Earth orbit. And so it's not that crazy. He makes a very good case that these aerodynamic principles are still in play. Can you build a lifting body that works up that altitude? I don't know, but I think it's an exciting idea.
Well, and in the chat, Stacy asks, well, why is that better than a rocket? And I would imagine, number one, cheaper. Number two, safer. You know, if you can avoid a controlled explosion to get from point A to point B, that's probably a better idea.
Usually a good idea.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, that states the question is, would you rather sit on top of a million pounds of fuel and wait for it to be ignited and then be pushed into space, or take a much more gentle, leisurely thing, ride into space? It's more like being in a cruise ship or something that glides you up to one point, you hop onto another vehicle, and then it's a much more gentle thing where you're not even aware of the acceleration. It would also be, given where he wrote this book, I think in 2008, it's an idea probably going back a decade or more for him. Given all the incredible developments we've had lately, for particularly Google Project Loon and development, we've set all sorts of records now for high altitude balloons that the experts said couldn't be done. It's an exciting era for this kind of development of near Earth space. And think of what you could do with automation. Think of what you could do with cargo ships and stuff. It might be fully reusable rockets might be the fast way to go, but this might be the fun, slow way to go. So,
well, and also keep in mind, like, oftentimes the slower way to go is the far more efficient way to go. Like, regardless of, let's say, mm-hmm. you know, a person wants to get up in 30 minutes rather than 8 hours or whatever, but, you know, 6,000 pounds of grain doesn't care if it takes the fast route or the slow route, in which case, you know, there could be a place for both for different reasons.
Unless you disagree and I've crossed the line. Or your Skype is frozen.
I believe he's frozen.
No.
That was the awkward moment that I think I really pissed off Andrew Main. Oh, okay, you're back now, Andrew.
It's a stern face.
Sorry, guys. Podcast done. And you have things too. If when you start looking into being able to beam power and microwave transmission of power, and if you have he envisions this thing having solar arrays, but you might be able to get rid of the solar arrays entirely and put in some sort of smaller receptor that could then just take power that was transmitted from the ground up to it and just have your fuel source that you're going to put into some sort of ion engine or whatever. Like it's an area that not a lot of people are trying to figure out because it's such a crazy idea. But once people stop laughing, as we talk about, you know, space, you know, we used to talk about the space elevator, it could be, it opens up the door to more exotic ways to get into low Earth orbit and space exploration. I've been reading up on using magnetic plasma bubbles for atmospheric reentry. It's exciting. My other pick is the book, The Making of Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
This is an official insider release?
Yes, this is all the concept art that played into, excuse me, not the making of, the art, that hasn't been released yet, The Art of Star Wars, The Force Awakens. The Art of Star Wars, The Force amazing concept art. It just any one page. All right, let's rip into the prequels a bit. So much more gorgeous and imagined. You see what was many times in there. They said, "Oh, the art director or so." JJ came in and said, "Create whatever you want. Just throw whatever you want at me." And there's so many things they just never made it into the film. But beautiful, amazing imaginings going into there. And some of the people who worked on, like Doug Chang and other people who've done great stuff, but were given like a rein to sort of create a little more freely and open, and just beautiful images in there. There's stuff that we're familiar with, but some of the things we did it from different earlier iterations of what they were going to do, creature designs, the junk planet and other stuff. And I have a feeling we'll probably see some of these things show up in the other films. So it's a beautiful, beautiful book, and it's right now it's on Amazon Prime for $24. I had it sitting on my coffee table. I hadn't even bothered to open it up, and then I took a look. There's a wonderful rendering in there where they show very primitive looking lightsabers, and they show this one lightsaber that's just like a crystal with some sort of igniter thing to it and just wrapped in twine. And the idea is to show you that a lightsaber isn't the brushed aluminum and all that. It's this kyber crystal or whatever they call it in the new version, you know, this crystal and some sort of energy source. And that's how primal it really is.
That's fantastic. And in fact, that's one of my favorite aspects of Star Wars The Force Awakens is that they showed this kind of janky, half-assed attempt at a mostly working lightsaber that Kylo Ren is wielding. I love the fact that while menacing and powerful, he's also such a chump change, you know, a pouty child of a dark Padawan.
Well, yeah, or he has certainly inherited the kind of mental abilities of the Force while kind of not having those trappings there. You know, like he doesn't have anybody to bring his lightsaber to be like, "Hey, why does this flicker?" You know, it's like, no, he's it, right? No one's showing him the way, which is so illustrative to his character.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.